We sued, you name it, big corporations from Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer. We sued Avon, a lot of the bigger makeup companies. These companies are making products that are not safe. They don't fix the problem. They don't even warn people in a lot of cases.
The importance around trusting brands, reading ingredients directly relates to our health. These companies do not care whatsoever. You have to advocate for yourself.
If I look at pictures of my face from 5 years ago, I literally do not recognize myself because I was so inflamed. Something that I was really shocked to learn when I started researching just the beauty products is how loosely they're regulated. It's a really corrupt, broken system.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, a 9-year non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, mom, and a certified integrative nutrition health coach. And after cancer, I wanted more than just survival. So I built the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide survivors and cancer-conscious humans to detox, rebuild, and thrive. In this episode, I sat down with Whitney Ray DeBona. Whitney is an attorney and consumer safety advocate with extensive experience representing individuals harmed by dangerous and defective products. After seeing companies repeatedly prioritize profits over consumer health and safety, she began using social media to raise public awareness. She educates and shares safer swaps on her Low-Tox Lawyer platform and works as an in-house legal expert at DrugWatch. You guys, Whitney is amazing. She shares so much valuable insight in this episode. She connects the dots between how our makeup and personal care products truly affect our overall health. We also talked all about GLP-1s and the peptide boom and what to watch out for and how to make our voices heard as consumers in such a toxic world. So grab a pen and paper because you will definitely need it, and let's get it started. Whitney, I'm so excited for this conversation today. You have no idea. I've been waiting and preparing. I was actually, when I was in the shower this morning, I was thinking about, from your perspective, your career, and like how, not only how rewarding it probably is to help people and kind of be in the trenches, and how purposeful the work that you're doing truly is. But then I also began to think, you know, the flip side of the coin, which there always is, how discouraging it probably is at times, how enraging, dare to say, it is, and how hard it is. From your perspective, like, how have things been going for your career in that way?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today. Yeah, it is a really frustrating job for any attorney who is working, you know, on behalf of injured people, especially if you're handling cases against big corporations, big government, anything like that. It's a really daunting task, and it's very emotionally taxing, and you can, you know, you get really invested in your cases and your clients, and then it's also really infuriating a lot of the time when you see what a lot of these companies are doing and what they're hiding and what they've covered up instead of, you know, doing what they could have done to make things right or make their products safer. And so it's definitely my career. It's had its great moments and it's had its wonderful moments, but it definitely is. There's been times where it's been really, really hard. So it's kind of a up and down roller coaster of emotions and all of those things.
Yeah, I can honestly only imagine. When you started off doing law, were you always interested in this niche, or did it come to you in a different way?
No, it kind of came to me. I initially was a prosecutor, so I was, you know, handling criminal cases and putting people in jail. So that was sort of a career shift for me to go from doing that to, well, I guess not really. It was kind of like the bad guys on the streets versus now it's the bad guys in the suits. So, but yeah, I handled criminal cases for quite some time. And then I don't even know how. I knew I was going to switch over to civil law at some point, and I knew that I wanted a job where I could help people. I just didn't really know exactly what I was going to do. And Actually, when I first left the state attorney's office, I went to an insurance defense firm representing State Farm. And I think I worked there for about 3 months before I was like, yeah, I can't do this. This is not the life for me. So I immediately started looking for a new job. And somehow I found this law firm that was hiring for a mesothelioma attorney, which I knew absolutely nothing about mesothelioma. I knew nothing about asbestos. But when I went in and interviewed for the job and I talked to them, I was like, oh, wow, you guys are doing incredible work here. This sounds like such an amazing opportunity. And so I took that job, not really knowing what I was getting myself into. But, you know, once I got in there and started handling those cases, it just kind of led me down a whole different path to get me to where I am today. So
do you feel like this is your calling? Like, this is your passion. This is what's driving you. And you kind of landed exactly where you needed to be.
Yes, 100%. You know, from working with all of my mesothelioma clients, it sort of led me down this whole journey of realizing that these companies are making products that are not safe. And, you know, I always in the past, I just assumed if things were sold in a store or, you know, there was a drug on the market that it was, you know, it had been tested and that it was safe for us to use. And what I started learning when I was litigating those cases was like, wow, these things are not safe. And when these companies find out that they're not safe, they don't do anything. They don't fix the problem. They don't even warn people in a lot of cases, in most cases, until they eventually get sued and then they're forced to. And so from handling those cases is really what led me to, first, it was kind of an inward, you know, I started looking at all the products that I was using in my own home and going, oh, okay, well, what's in this and what's in this? And, you know, I knew about talcum powder really is what started it all for me, because we started handling a lot of talcum powder cases at the law firm. And originally, I just kind of thought of talcum powder as only being related to baby powder. And I knew that there were these baby powder lawsuits. But when we started taking more of the talcum powder cases, it started to expand and it started to turn into, okay, we're suing makeup companies and we're suing all of these other products that I didn't even know had talc in them. There was kind of a day where I remember it was a makeup case that I had, and we were like, okay, we're going to sue these makeup companies and we're going to find out, you know, what kind of talc they were using, where were they getting it from, you know, was it contaminated with asbestos? And I was like, okay, well, you know, who are we suing here? Like, you know, going through all the evidence. And it was like, oh, we're going to sue like Maybelline and CoverGirl and, you know, some of these companies that for products that I had even personally used in my life. And I'm sitting there going, oh, okay, like these are the products that my client used and these are the companies that we're going to sue. And so I remember going home and I was like, I have to go through all my makeup and see if anything in here has talc. So that was sort of the first step, is going through everything, getting rid of anything I owned that had talc in it. But then from there, as I'm kind of reading the backs of the labels on all my makeup products, I was like, oh, well, what is all this other stuff? And so then I started doing a deep dive into, okay, what are all these things? What is in fragrance? What is in this? What is in that? And I went down the rabbit hole, and I've never been able to get out of the rabbit hole, unfortunately. So yeah, it you know, just kind of all transpired from there. And then I started to kind of speak up about these things on social media. And now I'm here talking to you.
You know, I'm so glad that you brought up this story and how you personally kind of stumbled upon it, because we talk about similar things on social media. I know I talk about non-toxic makeup and products and how much it really contributes to our overall toxic load at the end of the day. But I also feel like when I'm talking about it, or if I'm putting a piece of content out there, it kind of goes over people's head. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, so I won't use that as much, or I won't do that. And it's really hard to connect the dots. But when you hear that you're actually suing companies for cases, which I'm assuming, you know, are cancer related, some sort of disease related, you know, your clients are suffering in some way, that it truly does impact people. And it's not just this idea out there or this phantom thing that it's like, oh, it could happen, when it's like, no, but it really does. And we don't realize, like, to your note, you thought, oh, it's just in baby powder. And initially I did too. And then you take a deeper dive. You're like, oh my gosh, it's in everything. And then you go down the rabbit hole, like you said, but then your mind goes to, how are we allowed to do this? How are these ingredients allowed to be in personal products, in, you know, cleaning products, in our food? In, it's infuriating. It's frustrating. I'm a non-Hodgkin's cancer survivor, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, which we know is so heavily tied to glyphosate and glyphosate exposure. And it makes you very aware that the environment plays such a big piece. So thank you for kind of bringing that to reality, where yes, we hear about it, but the importance around trusting brands, reading ingredients, and really understanding what you're putting on your body directly relates to our health, no matter what. And nobody is going to advocate for you. These companies do not care whatsoever. You have to advocate for yourself. I was actually just having a conversation with someone that was on the podcast earlier this week, and I was saying I ran out of like body soap. And I was like, oh, you know, and I usually pre-order everything, I'm on top of it. And I just, it was busy and I forgot. So I ran to my local like health grocery store, and I went through every single product in that store, and I didn't buy anything. I could not bring myself to do it. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's such a sad day that I can't run to Target or Fresh Thyme where I was shopping at here in the Midwest and find a soap that doesn't have synthetic fragrance in it, that doesn't have some sort of preservative in it. You know, I can't, knowing what you know, you can never go back, right? Once you go down the rabbit hole, you can't really climb back out, and you can't do it. And I just think that's so sad that in this day and age, we can't trust most things on our shelves. And then I wanted to stay at the grocery store and tell everybody not to go down the aisle, which I didn't. I wasn't the crazy person, but I wanted to be, because it's just so incredibly important, right?
Yeah, I was actually at Sprouts just last night, and I had to run in there and pick up some last minute things. My son's having a birthday celebration at school today, so I needed to get some snacks to bring in. And I wanted a little sweet treat. So I went down the aisle with all the little chocolate prepackaged things that they have, you know, where they have where you can scoop out the candy and stuff. And I was looking at the back of all of these packages, and almost every single one was like BHA, BHT, like all these, you know, just chemicals and preservatives and things. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not getting the sweet treat tonight. But yeah, and that's in Sprouts, you know, which is allegedly a healthier place to shop. So people go in there just thinking that you can pick up anything and buy it. And if you don't dig in a little bit more and have a little more information, you know, you don't really know what you're actually buying. So
yeah, you know, and that's a really good point too. It's so annoying that when you are at a quote unquote healthy grocery store, that you still have to be careful. You cannot blindly trust 90% of the stuff that's in Whole Foods, Fresh Thyme, Sprouts. It's still shit. It's still filled with chemicals, preservatives, all the things. So it is. It makes it very hard as consumers, but it also wakes us up to, okay, where am I putting my money? Because that is power, right? What am I going to actually buy? What am I not going to buy? And start taking note of that. Now, I know that you've gone head to head with some of the largest corporations in the country. In your opinion, do you believe that consumer harm is accidental, or is it more systemic?
I think at this point, I would say it's systemic. You don't want to think that any company intentionally would make a product that's going to harm the consumer, but we've just seen over and over again now where, you know, they make these products and we don't find out until years later, sometimes decades later, that even during the formulation process or the initial testing, whatever initial testing was done, there were signs then and there. Like, they knew that there were issues, and instead of addressing the issue, fixing it, making the product safer, or maybe just not making that product at all. Maybe we scrap it, right? They push forward and they, you know, they're going to get this product on the market no matter what they have to do, especially when we're talking about things like pharmaceutical drugs, when they know they're going to make millions, billions of dollars, sometimes probably trillions of dollars off of these products. And so what ends up happening is these companies are really, I think, building in the cost of litigation that they know is going to come down the road for them. And in a lot of cases, you know, they're just kind of doing these evaluations where they're like, okay, well, if we're going to make trillions of dollars on this product, and let's say maybe we have to pay out, you know, X amount in lawsuits at some point in the future, they just kind of factor that in as a cost of doing business. And it's, unfortunately, I think consumer harm is just sort of part of the business plan for a lot of these companies. So it's a sad reality, but that's what I would have to say about that.
Yeah, time and time again, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's over and over.
What I don't understand, though, there's no regulations in place, or is there loopholes or what? How do these products get past all of that if they are showing evidence during testing that it could potentially be harmful?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, what kind of product you're talking about. You know, something that I was really shocked to learn when I started researching just the beauty products is how loosely they're regulated and that there's basically no safety testing required by the FDA before you put one of these products on the market. I remember learning that and I was like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I could go in my kitchen right now and I could whip up some kind of, I don't know, oil or lotion or whatever and skincare product, and then I could sell it. I can legally sell it. You know, they just kind of give this loose, well, it's on the manufacturer to make sure that the product is safe and that it's not harmful, but there is no real test for that. And there's no real, you know, anything that's required by the FDA before these products get sold. And so, like I was saying earlier, you know, people just assume that these things have been tested and rigorously tested and that it's safe. And so many times that's really not the case. And then when we're looking at other things like pharmaceutical drugs or pesticides, we see the situation where the companies are actually funding the science that is then being relied on for the safety data.
People are in bed with each other and it's just a corrupt, vicious cycle.
It's a really corrupt, broken system.
Do you feel like it's getting better?
I don't know that it's getting better. I think there's more awareness. I think there's way more people now that are, you know, kind of understanding what's going on and waking up to a lot of this. But I don't know that enough is being done to actually fix anything or make, you know, make it safer for all of us.
Okay. And for people listening who don't know, you represent clients who have been harmed by toxic exposures at home and in the workplace. And you've worked with some really big corporations and different types of companies. Can you let the listeners know what kind of corporations and companies that you've worked with and who you've sued and what the outcomes were?
Yeah. So previously, when I was litigating the asbestos cases, you know, we sued pretty much, I mean, you name it, big corporations for like the talcum powder cases, we're talking about Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. We sued Avon, a lot of the bigger makeup companies. And then we also sued companies like Ford Motor Company or, you know, we had a lot of clients who were auto mechanics. We had a lot of clients who worked in the construction industry. So a lot of the big construction companies, manufacturers of products that are in that industry, paint companies. We had so many random products there that, you know, you learned as you went actually contained asbestos. Even things like bowling balls. We had some clients that worked in bowling ball factory where they would make bowling balls and, you know, shocked to find out that there was asbestos in bowling balls or in the manufacturing process. So Yeah, lots of companies like that for cases that I've handled personally. And then currently I work with an organization called Drug Watch, and we are a consumer-facing news organization. We basically report and put out information on all of these major mass tort lawsuits that are going on right now. And then we have a network of attorneys that we work with on, you know, all these individual lawsuits. So people come to us all the time needing to find a lawyer, needing to find help for these different cases, and we will match them up with the specific attorneys that are handling and litigating those cases. And we're covering everything right now from the Roundup litigation to the Ozempic lawsuits, chemical hair relaxer cases, Depo Provera. We have some PFAS litigation. There's all sorts of things that we're kind of covering right now. So that's what I'm handling at the moment.
That's amazing. And you know, I'm sure that you don't normally see accountability attached to a lot of these companies or even hitting them as hard as it would to hurt them. But from a larger scale, connecting people to attorneys that can truly help them, you know, because people don't know where to start either. And you want to be in the right hands and have the, you know, having the right attorney is absolutely everything at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. Especially for these types of cases, because they are, you know, it's not like a car accident case where, I mean, you still want to make sure you're hiring a good lawyer to handle your car accident case. But when you're going up against these types of corporations with this kind of money and the kind of strategies that they have, you really need someone who is somebody that knows what they're doing and that is kind of on the front lines litigating that specific type of case. So,
oh, absolutely. I can only imagine the tricks that are pulled out and put in front of you guys day after day to just push things out.
Yeah, it's wild.
What kind of health issues do your clients typically deal with?
Yeah, so right now, like I said, we're really helping individuals with cases in a lot of different areas and connecting them with different attorneys that are really experienced in handling those types of cases. But obviously, the Roundup litigation is huge right now. And I did not know that you had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but that is the cancer that specifically is tied to the glyphosate and the Roundup cases. There's so much that's been going on with those cases right now. There's a major Supreme Court hearing that's coming up in next week, the week after.
I saw that on your social media this morning. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You're protesting at the Supreme Court, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's going to be a large group of us there protesting because this case is really a huge case that is going to basically decide whether or not individuals can continue to sue these pesticide companies when they get sick from these products. And I think that a lot of people don't even know that this is happening. And I think that this is, personally, I think this is one of the, you know, most just, like, this is the biggest story that's happening right now in terms of health. And I just don't think that people really know that it's going on or understand the impact that this case will have. So, yeah, I'll be at the Supreme Court on April 27th with a lot of other people for a big protest that's happening there on the Roundup litigation.
You know, because we see this really this rise in cancer and autoimmune diseases, chronic illnesses, right? And we know that, you know, there's a very small percentage that's coming from a genetic point in your body, right? Most of it, 80 to 90% of it's coming from your environment and your lifestyle. And from a consumer safety perspective, right, we can start to really start to connect the dots, like you were saying, with Roundup, with glyphosate and lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We know that that's such a huge connection, but there's other connections too. And I know, I think, like, wasn't baby powder and the talc really connected with ovarian cancer and different hormonal-driven cancers as well?
Yeah, the two main lawsuits for the talcum powder products, it's going to be either mesothelioma or ovarian cancer.
Which is a type of lung cancer, right?
So mesothelioma is a type of cancer that affects the lining of different organs. It's usually in the lungs, but it can also be found in other organs. Basically, whenever somebody's exposed to asbestos, and so when we're talking about talcum powder, if there's if it's asbestos contaminated talcum powder and you're using that powder and that powder is going up into the air, you're going to breathe in the powder and those asbestos fibers are going to basically go down into your body and they will embed themselves in the lining of your organs. And it can take 30, 40 years for it to develop into cancer. That's why it's a really hard cancer, I think, for a lot of people to kind of wrap their heads around, because it just, when you explain it, it sounds kind of crazy how it all happens and then how it can take that long for it to actually develop into cancer. But
oh, I think it's so interesting. I mean, cancer is so crazy. They can work in so many different ways, but to me, it makes sense, you know?
Yeah. And so for that particular cancer, you know, it has such a long latency period. So typically when you would think about mesothelioma, you know, you're thinking about older men that are, you know, in their 70s or something that used to work in industries like they were, you know, maybe they were in the Navy or they worked on pumps and valves or auto mechanics, construction. Those kind of industries are what typically we've always associated with mesothelioma and asbestos. But what started happening is we were having a lot of clients who were younger, a lot of clients who were women that never actually worked in any type of an industrial setting, and they didn't have family, because asbestos, you can bring it home on your clothing. So a lot of these cases were, it was so sad, where it was like the dad worked in the factory and he would bring all of the asbestos fibers home on his clothing. And then either the wife or the daughter or the kids would do the laundry. And then they're the ones that ended up getting mesothelioma. But, you know, we would have these clients that would come in and they didn't have any connections like that. There wasn't anything where we would say, oh, you were exposed to asbestos here. And that's when we started really connecting it more towards all of the cosmetic products and the powder products, because, you know, it seems like you're not going to get a lot of exposure in something like eyeshadow or, you know, face powder. But most women are using those products every single day for practically their entire lives, sometimes applying these products multiple times a day. Especially with, you know, the baby powder, a lot of women would use it after every shower and just kind of like, you know, drench their entire body in that powder. They use it after the gym. I had clients that said they would use it for air freshener in their house. They would just kind of walk around with the baby powder bottle, just sprinkling it everywhere.
I have a client who said she would use it every single day for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's all of the clients I've represented that used baby powder like that. Typically, it was like a family thing. Like your mom used baby powder and she would teach them from a young age, like every time you get out of the shower, you know, we use baby powder. And it was kind of a thing that then they carried into their own lives. They would use baby powder every day. Then they would use it on their own kids.
It's the accumulation, the daily exposure that's really starting to become, I think, more of a topic of conversation, right? Not being exposed to something once. It's the constant exposures of what we're doing every day that really matter. And it's hard because in this day and age, we can't escape it. It's like you said, we can't go in the grocery store without seeing, you know, a million different ingredients. We're exposed to it so much more through our water, through our air, through our cleaning products and our personal care products and our food and perfumes and, you know, everything, lotion, everything that's around us. And when you can't escape it, like, you know, we all have our own, you know, rain barrel bucket, which we've all heard the expression, you know, there's always that constant drip. But when you are not avoiding, right, and if you're just, say, the average person going in and getting the Febreze and getting the scented laundry detergent and doing these things for years and years and years, our immune system can only handle so much. Holes will start to be poked and things will start to happen. And it's hard. And you think sometimes even you're making the right choices, right? Oh, I'm making the best choice for my family. And then, you know, you find out 6 months later, like, shit, that was the worst choice, yeah. You know? And you have to give yourself a lot of grace for a low-tox journey because things change so much, but that constant exposure. And, you know, when you're talking about the baby powder in particular, it makes me so mad because we're putting it on babies. It was the babies. And even now, gosh, I just saw something, I can't remember what it was, but just how there's no regulation on most baby products. Obviously for adults too, but you are talking about a little precious child that's coming into the world, does not have a great immune system yet, does not have like a fully developed gut, you know, your first year of life, you're laying the groundwork and the foundation for all of that. So you're starting to be exposed in so many different ways. And then we're setting this kid up to fail or to just have problems. And again, it's hard because we blindly trust CPG companies. We have to stop. We just have to stop because it's affecting all of us in such a greater way. These rates of cancer and autoimmune disease are so astronomical. Even from my perspective, you know, I coach preventers and I also coach survivors. I have survivors that are so young. I had consults with 18-year-olds, 21-year-olds, like just insane. Cancer used to be such a quote-unquote like old person's disease. Like, oh, you hit 90 and you kind of get cancer, whatever the case is. And now it's just, I had it at 32, right? That's not normal. That's not normal.
It's not normal. And I know it's, you know, with every type of cancer, I think it's just, you know, we're seeing more and more people getting all of these types of cancer at younger ages, but specifically going back to mesothelioma, which, like I said earlier, was always a disease that you kind of just associated more with old people. But there are so many younger people that are getting diagnosed with mesothelioma. And I know there's been clients even like in their 20s, and the only link of exposure for them was really going back to their mom using baby powder on them in the 80s or whatever. So yeah, I mean, we had clients in their 30s, a lot of women in their 40s, just younger, you know, like they don't fit the typical criteria of what we have always thought of when we would think of a mesothelioma patient. So it's happening everywhere, even with these really, really, I mean, mesothelioma is an extremely rare cancer to begin with. So to be seeing it in, you know, in this younger population is really, really scary.
It's very jarring. I remember I'm 41, but I remember like back in the 90s, if I stayed up late or something, all the like late night commercials were always attorneys for that, like all the time. So that's my only association with it. And then when I obviously like older, now that I'm kind of in this cancer niche, you hear about all different types of cancer and how they're connected to different products and pharmaceuticals. And it's so hard because people, I've had clients where like, they took a pharmaceutical for, let's say, UC or some, you know, psoriatic arthritis or something, you know, taking one of these drugs. And the side effect is, say, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma or leukemia or a very, very specific strain of leukemia. And it has just like a crazy name with numbers and letters in it, et cetera. And then a year and a half after, the person that I'm now coaching is recovering from that. And they're like, well, I signed off on the paperwork. You know, it was, they said it was less than a 1% chance and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I say this because, and I say this, and I can say this to you because you're in this industry, and you know this. My husband, he has psoriatic arthritis and it's from a genetic component. And so he always asks me to like come to his doctor's appointments with him and stuff like that because I'm somebody that asks a ton of questions and I can retain it. He's somebody that goes and he's like, I forgot everything. I don't even know it. I'm like, did you I told you to ask this, this, and this, you know? So he was like, just come with me. You know, he was overwhelmed one day and it was like pain management and everything. And they're like, you should get on, you know, like a Skyrizi or something like that. Like one of those biologics to help control it because it was starting to spread to his spine and stuff. And he was like, you know, my whole reason is because a lot of the results of these medications are cancer, specifically all different types of cancer. And I was pressing them on it, these doctors. And one of the doctors looked at me and said, she goes, well, it's just blood cancer. It's not an organ cancer. And I was like, jaw hit the floor. And my husband knew that I was probably about to you know, lose it on this person. And I'm like, do you think that makes a difference? Do you think that doesn't matter? And like warning people correctly. And, you know, a lot of people feel helpless at the end of the day because they're like, we did sign off on the paperwork and this is in there and everything like that. But just really understanding that the pharmaceuticals along with the products too, like everything kind of has some sort of consequence sometimes. And it's so difficult. It's so hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. As an attorney, after you've seen a lot of the things that I've seen, because I'm terrified to do, you know, anything. I don't want to take any, I'm scared to take Tylenol. Like I just, you know, you see these things and you're like, ugh, you know, the problem is people are always told, it's just so rare. This side effect is so rare, or the possibility of this happening to you is, you know, it's a one in
less than one,
whatever chance. Yeah. And so people don't even take it into consideration. They're just like, oh, okay, like that's not going to happen to me. But when you are in the 1% of people that horrific thing happens to, you wish that you would have had a more serious conversation with somebody, or you would have been warned. A lot of people aren't even warned at all about these things. But you know, when you are the person in that spot and that happens to you, yeah, if you could go back in time, would you have taken that drug or had that surgery or done whatever or use that product, especially when we're talking about a product that is easily replaceable? I understand if you have a serious medical condition and you need this drug to save your life. Okay, well, maybe there's risks or whatever, but it's always balancing.
It's the lesser two evils.
Exactly. It's like the risk versus reward. But yeah, when we're talking about something like products that we can easily swap out for something with a safer ingredient, that's where it upsets me a lot, because it's like there was no reason to use this product. I could have used something else. If I had known that this was dangerous, I would have just made a better choice. So
yeah. So what are some of your favorite swaps that you've made personally since knowing all of this now?
So it's, you know, a never-ending journey of swapping things in my house. I feel like I did my journey a little bit backwards. I think in the beginning, I was probably swapping out things that mattered a little bit less, because like I said, I started with just my makeup because I was like, that was what was in my face at the moment. But yeah, I think just switching over to cleaner makeup products, skincare products, body care, all of that, that was sort of where I started. And then I moved into food and, you know, eliminating ultra processed food from my diet for the most part and not feeding it to my kids anymore, which, you know, that's been a whole process of just really switching our entire lifestyle. And not just me, it's, I have a family that I'm trying to convince, hey, we're, you know, they're asking where the snacks in the pantry are. And I'm like, oh, the snacks are in the fridge. It's the carrots and the apples. That's your snack now, you know, and getting my husband on board with everything. So it's sort of a never ending process, but I think switching the diet, making sure that we're drinking clean filtered water, I think that those are really like the most impactful things that you can do, because that's, I feel like a new human being since I really overhauled my lifestyle. So
that's interesting. What do you feel like has changed the most for your own personal health since you've did that overhaul?
I think just how I feel. Like I felt horrible before when I was using toxic products. I was eating just the worst diet of, you know, not prioritizing protein, not doing any of the things that I needed to do, not making sure I was sleeping at night. And there were just so many things that now I've really made a conscious effort of switching and focusing on. And I feel like a new human being. I look like a new human being. If I look at pictures of my face from 5 years ago, I literally do not recognize myself because I was so inflamed. I was just not healthy. And to go from feeling like that to the way that I feel right now, there's just no one that can convince me that these things don't matter and that they don't make a difference, because I can literally feel it and see it in my own face.
I know, isn't it wild? When I look back on pictures too, it's like you can tell that that there's like a certain inflammation puffiness that's very distinct, you know, and it exaggerates your features. And I don't know about you, but like I know for me, a lot of brain fog. I used to get a lot of brain fog, and I didn't even really know what brain fog was until you kind of make that switch and stop, right? The changes can happen so fast too. That's what I think most people don't know. There's even been studies shown too, where if you go from eating like a non-organic diet to an organic diet, you can dramatically see the pesticide residues in your body completely drop, like within 5 to 7 days. And there was the other study that was happening. I talk about this study all the time. It's all over social media, but how changing out your personal care products in 28 days can reverse precancerous cells, can change your breast tissue as women. These are really, really huge facts. And we don't have a ton of studies, true studies that we can name, because a lot of them are not done. It's expensive. You're giving people, right, bad products to use for, you know, testing and all of that. But this, it's to me, I just need one study out there that shows, okay, those conventional products, the Dove, the Secret, the Herbal Essence, and the Pantene, the Native, right? The things that you're using directly affects your breast tissue. You're putting that stuff in your armpits, your lymph nodes, you know, it's just so important. And you're right. You do feel better and your body cleanses itself better. I truly believe that when you support your body by choosing better products, you're lightening your toxic load. You're helping your natural detoxification process to work in just such a better way, right?
Yeah.
Are there specific ingredients women should be especially mindful of in personal care products, such as makeup or lotions and stuff like that, when it comes to everything that you've seen from your end? Like you've mentioned talc. Is there any other that you can give us so we can be a little bit more mindful when reading ingredients?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest things in terms of makeup and personal care products, obviously I'm always looking for talc, but fragrance, if you can cut the fragrance, the synthetic fragrance, I think that is like one of the most significant things you can do across the board, really in your entire home. If you can get the synthetic fragrance out of your personal care products, out of your candles and your air fresheners and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, your cleaning products, if you can just get the synthetic fragrance out of your home, I think that drastically reduces your exposure to a lot of harmful toxins. And also you can tell, you know, like once you stop using those products, if I get anywhere near synthetic fragrance now, I feel physically ill. My husband bought scented trash bags recently, and I was cleaning out my daughter's like clothes that didn't fit her anymore. And so I was like up in her bedroom and I had this scented trash bag. I felt like I was literally going to throw up. I had a headache. I was like, it's from this trash bag. And if I get around anyone, you know, wearing like really strong perfume or anything like that now, and I used to be that person. I used to like drench myself in Chanel and go to court.
Yes.
I feel so I have to like apologize to people that, you know, used to work with me or around me. But yeah, you just realize when you get back around it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this stuff really is so toxic, but you don't realize that when you're using it every single day, you're just kind of immune to it. And so, yeah, I would say fragrance, and then obviously avoiding anything. If you're avoiding fragrance, you're typically avoiding phthalates, parabens. That's not always the case, but I think the phthalates, parabens, fragrance, and talc are kind of like the main things that I would be looking for to avoid in personal care products for women, for men too.
Yeah. I think that sounds exactly right. Okay, I want to switch gears for a minute because you start talking a lot about this on social media, and I was so glad you did because it's everything I'm thinking when I go on social media now with the whole rise in the GLP-1s and the peptides and how every like Tom, Dick, and Harry is selling them and promoting them and getting commissions off them. Oh, first of all, How is it legal? How are these influencers allowed to sell peptides? I mean, we don't know where they're coming from. We don't know where they're made, what's going in them. I always look at it from like a cancer lens, of course. You're putting something in your body that can grow things in your body, which is incredibly concerning. Like, I can't just take any kind of peptide or anything. Like, you need medical advisement. We're all bioindividual. We're all very different. How is it legal that anybody can literally just sign up and start selling a stack of peptides or GLP-1s?
So this whole situation is so crazy and it's so out of control. There are people making arguments like all across the board on whether or not these gray market peptides should be allowed or not allowed. What I think is really interesting is we have the GLP-1 drugs that are like Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, like the name brand drugs. Those drugs are FDA approved. They've gone through trials, safety trials. They've gone through that process and they are approved by the FDA and they can be prescribed, obviously, by doctors. And, you know, not everyone is on a board with the FDA and, you know, agrees with their safety approval process. And I understand the criticism of that. Then you have in this other camp, medical providers who are selling GLP-1s or, you know, some of these other peptides through compounding pharmacies. I don't think people understand when you're getting any of these drugs from compounding pharmacies, those are not FDA approved. That process that has not been tested, you know, safety approved, there's none of that for the compounded drugs.
Which means like essentially you don't know at all what's in them. That's essentially what you're saying. We don't know if they're safe or not safe.
Yeah, because basically what they're doing is the providers are sort of recommending their own dosage of these drugs. And in some cases, they're mixing them with other things. And I hear these providers, some of the providers that are doing extensive labs and working really closely with their patients. And they really are trying to tailor these medications to their specific patient because they're saying that the name brand approved drugs are not appropriate for every single patient and every single person. And that in some cases, the dosing is wrong or it's too much or it's too little or, you know, whatever their criticisms of the name brand drugs are. And so they don't want the name brand drugs to have this monopoly and, you know, make it so that they can't provide these custom solutions for their individual patients. So I understand that and I hear that argument. The problem for me is that most providers, I don't want to say most providers, but there are a lot of providers out there. And when I say providers, I'm talking every med spa on the planet right now is offering GLP-1s and peptides. We have all of these telehealth companies that have sprung up out of nowhere. People that don't have medical backgrounds, there's like influencers. Savannah Chrisley has a GLP-1 telehealth company, and they're prescribing these compounded drugs to people. And they're not doing any, they don't require lab testing. You're not working hand in hand close with a doctor. It's you fill out a questionnaire online, and then they ship you the drugs, whatever's in them. Sometimes same day or like, you know, next day we'll get you your GLP-1s. And so that is extremely concerning. So, I hear and I understand that there are some of these functional doctors out there that are like, I really want to do the right thing here and help my client and my patient and, you know, follow their journey and make sure we're, you know, monitoring their progress and everything. But that's not in the majority of situations. That's not what's happening. People are just being handed these drugs like it's candy. And it's so scary. And then when you go off into all these other peptides that are out there right now, same thing. Like there's so many people within the wellness community that are saying, these are amazing and there shouldn't be any restrictions. And they're just like vitamins. It's no different from, you know, taking a supplement. And there's no safety data. There's nothing out there that is showing that these things are safe. And so I'm really worried about, you know, what we're going to learn about this stuff 5-10 years from now. You know, the GLP-1s, I don't want to say that I'm anti-GLP-1. Would I take one? No, because I'm healthy. I don't have any reason to take one. But I think that there's so many people right now that are being convinced that they need to take one because it's being advertised for every problem known to man. It's like, oh, are you, you know, 22 years old and you're going on spring break in a few weeks and you want to lose 10 pounds, you should get a GLP-1. Are you postpartum and you can't, you know, you have brain fog and you feel bad and you need to lose your baby weight? You should get a GLP-1. Are you in perimenopause? You need to be on a GLP-1. If you're in menopause, like it's for every stage of life. My mom actually earlier, because I've been talking about this a lot, I have to pull up what she sent me. She sent me an ad that she was targeted. That's like an older woman. And it says, semaglutide, $99 a month, prescribed in as fast as 4 hours. And it says, terzepatine bulk discounts for seniors. Stock up like it's toilet paper.
Stop.
Yeah, the advertising is what is blowing my mind because when I started really doing some research on these things recently, I started getting all of these really targeted ads and they are so aggressive. It's if I, you know, scroll through my feed, every other thing I see is a different telehealth company trying to sell me a GLP-1 medication. So it's just, I don't know. It's out of control.
It seems like we're in this like area where it's like, okay, doctors have the right to prescribe it. And then it's the wild, wild west for like everybody else. And there's no in between, right? It's just that or not. Are there legal risks for providers and consumers that people aren't talking about?
Yeah. So one other, so we talked about the name brand drugs, and then you have these compounded drugs coming through the compounding pharmacies. And then there is this gray market peptide situation where you have these websites that are selling peptides. Like you can just go onto a website and buy terzepatide or buy whatever. And when you first go to these websites, a disclaimer will pop up and it says, not for human consumption, not to be injected in the human body, that these are for research only purposes. But anybody can go on these websites and buy them and mix them up themselves at home and inject this stuff. And it's just sort of legal through this loophole for now. I hope that something happens with this. But so that's what's happening. And so we're seeing all of these influencers, all of these people selling their peptide stacks. They're giving discount codes through these different providers. And I would be terrified to be doing that because you are essentially giving medical advice without a medical license. And so if you're selling these peptides to these people and giving them advice on which ones to buy. I mean, their people are being really specific, like, here's my peptide stack, or let me help you figure out what peptide stack is going to be right for you. And it's like, you guys are literally giving illegal medical advice. And then if one of these people that you're selling this stuff to, if they go and take it and then they get hurt or something bad happens to them, I hope that you have some kind of insurance covering your illegal medical advice that you're handing out, because that's extremely concerning and you're really opening yourself up to like so much liability there. It's I can't believe that people are doing this.
I couldn't agree more. There's a few influencers, which I don't follow anymore, but I was following, that have gone over to this dark side of peptides, that like every post, everything. And I'm just like, you have a responsibility. I don't know. You, in my opinion, you have a responsibility that the information you're putting out there, not only are people listening to and taking to heart, but are now making medical changes on because you have a discount code, because you get a commission off of it. And like you said, it's medical advice that you're giving to people. And I don't understand when that shift happened or if it's purely because of money and people wanting to get paid. And I anticipate that, you know, there's going to be stricter regulations coming. At least I hope so. And this is just like a weird gray area. But even just from an ethical perspective, how in good conscience can you refer a product without even knowing that there's just an array of different people out there with different medical conditions?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all because of money. These influencers are making a lot of money selling these things. And a lot of the telehealth companies even, you know, there's the people that are doing the gray market stuff, but then there are actual telehealth companies that are paying influencers to promote the GLP-1s. And I get emails from them all of the time. I heard another girl that I follow say that this company was offering her as much as like $300 for every single person that that signed up for the GLP-1s with her code. And I mean, you see her, like, it's just, I don't know. It's crazy.
And see, to me, that's like it's such a red flag. It's such BS. Like, if someone's offering you that, it's like, why are you pushing this so hard? Why are you pushing this so much? And then to me, I'm like skeptical off the bat, you know, like that just sounds so weird. Why are you wanting to pay me so much money for this, this, and that, you know? And it's true. So many different fitness influencers are like, my peptide stack, this is what I'm doing. It brings down my chronic inflammation, helps balance my blood sugar, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and sometimes I find myself getting not like pulled in, like I'm going to get it, but pulled in, like listening to what their reel is saying. Like, no, I'm not even going to put effort or energy towards this. I don't even want it to have my view, because and I think about myself like 10 years younger, I would have totally did it.
Oh my gosh, I would have signed up. I would have gotten a Groupon, and I would have probably gone to the sketchiest men's spa, and I would be on a GLP-1 right now. And I would probably weigh like 90 pounds and be so unhealthy. And no one would know, because it's not being monitored by doctors. It's absolutely terrifying. And on that same point, one of the scary things when I started getting targeted with all of those ads, I said, I think my Facebook I'm not really active on there. So I think it doesn't quite know like how old I am or like, you know, who I am. It was like, it was trying to figure it out. And a lot of the ads that I was seeing were targeted towards like Gen Z and, you know, younger women. And it was those ads were so scary, because they were all literally just like, oh, you know, spring break's coming up. I just wanted to lose a couple of pounds and I got on a GLP-1 and everything, making it like, oh, taking a GLP-1 with my bestie, taking our GLP-1s on vacation with my bestie, you know, just trying to make it seem like it's no big deal and just such a nonchalant thing to do. And I just think, oh my gosh.
And think about those younger kids too, where you don't have to ask your parent to get it. You can get it. You have a bank account or whatever the case is. So there's no authority being put.
No, there's nobody to be like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do this. And, you know, the pressure of being thin is, you know, it's always been there, but it's just so intense right now. And the marketing of what I'm seeing with the marketing is, I think, the scariest part. Because look, like I said earlier, you always weigh the risk versus the reward of anything that you do in life. And so for some people, GLP-1s, you know, maybe they're helpful for you. And if you're working with a doctor and a dietitian and you're doing all the things that you're supposed to be doing, okay. You know, I'm not saying that I'm just like 1,000% think no one should have access to these drugs, but you know, there's too much unknown for me right now. And even within the medical community, when I see the medical doctors like all over the map on GLP-1s and on these peptides, that is a major red flag right there to me. I'm like, why would I take this if the doctors can't even decide like whether these things are good or bad? I need to see way more research. I need like 50 more years to go by. And then, you know, maybe I'll think about it. But it's just, there's so many red flags. There's so much gray area right now. And the way that they're being marketed is just, it's so aggressive and it's so in your face. It's inappropriate and it's everywhere. You cannot get away from it, whether it's targeted ads, whether it's watching, you know, anything on TV. Every other ad is an Ozempic or GLP-1 commercial. And then now it's every influencer that you follow in your feed. Like, it's not normal to log in to my Instagram every day and just see all of these women injecting themselves with whatever they're doing. Like, if you want to do that, fine, but just, it doesn't need to be the only thing that I see all day long, every single day. It's not normal.
It's almost a flex for somebody who's being healthy and losing weight naturally. Like, that's now become not the norm, right? That's the outlier versus everyone being on GLP-1s. And I think you mentioned earlier too that you were dealing with some cases against Ozempic or having...
Yeah, there are Ozempic lawsuits. I think there's, I have to double check the numbers, but there's a couple thousand cases right now pending in a federal MDL. So there's two different federal MDLs. There's one that is for the stomach issues like gastroparesis, stomach paralysis. And then there's a newer MDL that is for an eye condition called NAION. And it is basically it's like an eye stroke, and these people are going blind and like completely losing the vision in one or both of their eyes. Those lawsuits are pending right now. You know, new ones are being filed all the time. And I really think, you know, given more time and more people being prescribed to these drugs, I have a feeling that, you know, there's going to be more things that are going to come out that we just don't know right now. And I know people say, oh, these have been around for 20 years and they're very well studied, but that doesn't mean anything. Sometimes there's drugs that have been on the market for a long time that, you know, we don't find out until way later that it was causing a specific issue. And especially these drugs have never been prescribed the way they're being prescribed right now to everyone.
I was going to say, it's the audience. It's not a controlled audience. It's not a controlled population that are just dealing with diabetes or just dealing with this. It's everybody. So that opens it up. I feel like you're going to see a boom happen in the next 5 to 10 years of just all of the backlash around all of this. Truly. I think that's going to be the next like wave of lawsuits. How could it not be?
I know. I never want to say that, but I'm like, I think it's unavoidable at this point because of how irresponsibly these drugs are being handed out. And, you know, some of these drugs are still in development. Retatrutide is the next one that is, people are buying it right now on the gray market and using it, you know, just from these random websites. But that one is in clinical trials right now, and they're expecting that to come on the market. And that one actually is showing even more dramatic weight loss than Ozempic and Mounjaro and some of the ones that are on the market right now. So, you know, there's just more of these drugs coming down the pipeline. And, you know, I don't know, TBD on what's going to happen in the next 5, 10, 20 years from all of the people that are taking these drugs right now. So
you also recently shared that the FDA added a brain tumor warning to commonly used birth control shots. As we wrap up here too, I just think I wanted to touch on this because it's just so important. And I know that there's still so many people out there taking birth control and doing the shots. Can you explain what happened and what people should really understand about this specifically?
Yes. So Depo-Provera is a birth control shot that has been widely prescribed for many years. And there were some recent studies that came out showing that it is linked to the development of meningioma brain tumors, and in some cases, spine tumors in women who are, you know, have taken the shot. And so there are also lawsuits pending right now based on that. Again, I can't remember right off the top of my head the number. I want to say that there's like over 3,000 of those cases that are pending right now in the Northern District of Florida. So we're still kind of in the early stages of that litigation. But these studies came out showing that there was something like a 50% increase in your chance of developing one of these tumors from taking those birth control shots. And the FDA actually just recently change the warning label to add that on there so that people can at least be aware that, hey, this is a risk if you're going to take this birth control shot. So yeah, those cases are out there as well.
50% is a big number. That's a very big increase. And that's something that they just didn't know or it was never tested for. And then after years, it's come to know that.
So again, this is a situation where there were studies and indications that this was a risk. They actually have required this on the warning labels in Europe for some time now, but they did not include it on the warning label here in the U.S. So, you know, back to our conversation earlier where a lot of times these companies know things way before we do. And it takes either, usually it takes lawsuits in order to push any kind of change, in order to get them to actually put a warning label on a product or to make the product safer. So that's kind of what we're seeing with the Depo Provera shots right now.
Okay. So, you know, as we, again, as we wrap up here, I just, as consumers, what can we do to really, like, what really hits companies hardest? Is it lawsuits? Is it where we're putting our money? Like, how do we approach everything that we talked about today from a consumer standpoint?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of, you know, people just, again, becoming more aware of everything that's going on, making smarter decisions with where we put our money. If everybody starts only buying organic produce, you know, okay, what's going to happen to all the non-organic produce? Or, you know, we're purchasing beauty products that don't contain fragrance. If we make it known, hey, if you put synthetic fragrance in this, like, we're not buying it. And if the demand goes down, then they're going to start making the products that we, the consumers, are asking for and demanding. So I think that that is the biggest thing that, you know, just the everyday person can do, is to try and educate yourself and just make better choices with where you spend your money. And then obviously lawsuits and, you know, that's what really drives change, because you have to hit these companies where it hurts, and that's it, it all comes down to money. So,
well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, and honestly, just for advocating for all of us and sharing all of this information on social media. Please tell everybody where they can find you, because you guys, her Instagram is so great and there's so much free information that she gives that's just fantastic. So please tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, so people can find me on Instagram at LobetalksLawyer. And then if anybody wants information on any of the lawsuits that we talked about today, there's a lot of other lawsuits we cover that we didn't talk about. They can go to drugwatch.com to learn more. And maybe I can give you a link or something to add for anybody that wants a free case evaluation. I can give you that information too.
Perfect. I can link all that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Amazing. And aren't you starting your own podcast too?
Yeah, so we have a new podcast coming out that I'm producing with Drug Watch. It's called Health on Trial. And I think the first episode is going to be out next week. Probably by the time this airs, it'll be live. So we're kind of in the final production stages on that right now. So yeah, that'll be out. And we're going to have lots of really exciting guests kind of in the health and wellness space. I'm sure probably a lot of your audience would be into some of the topics that we're going to cover. So check it out.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Congratulations. That's great. Well, thank you so much. And you guys, I will link everything in the show notes, and feel free to reach out or to click on any of the links to receive more information. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.